In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And, well, it's been a few weeks since you've heard from us. And that has to do with some personal things that were going on in the lives of one of the people on this podcast.
Holy smokes. Yeah, you're putting it light.
It's something that we may talk about in the future. We may not talk about right now. But needless to say, it's something that kind of had us take a couple of weeks off for break for personal reasons. And well, again, we'll touch on that topic when, unless you want to you want to touch on that topic right now.
I don't think it's something that's necessarily needs to be kept as something majorly personal. It's something that's part of a major thing that's happening socially. And I have a couple of words, not a huge amount, but I can keep it light and I can keep it brief if you're okay with that.
Sure, that works for me.
Okay.
I will say that I'm not proud of your beer choice, but whatever.
My beer choice?
Yeah, drinking that Mexican stuff.
Yeah, right? Yeah, geez. Yeah, I especially when I don't know what letter of the Greek alphabet we're on anymore. But okay, so basically, long story short, guys, I caught COVID a couple of weeks ago. And I had the worst fucking time. I didn't have the absolute worst time. There has been a lot of people that have dealt with on a lot worse level than I have, and I can be very grateful for that. Very grateful for that.
Because the thing is, you're still alive.
Right, exactly. Like, as far as what I dealt with, it could be a lot worse. And
like dead, worse, like dead.
Yeah. there were... I didn't personally think that there was a situation where I thought that my life was particularly in danger or anything. I was extremely vigilant, and my wife and I are very, very good at being very on watch when it comes to something as important as this to keep an eye on. So as far as that was concerned, like, there were no particular signs where I thought that I was in any kind of danger. I never thought that I would have to even go to the hospital. And this is a more, I would consider this to be a more recent strain of it. It wasn't the big ones. It wasn't like Delta or the initial. I caught one of the strains of Omicron, most likely. I don't know. I don't have it confirmed, but most likely BA5, which is the strain that's going around as the dominant strain in the United States. And I'm still, you could probably hear it in my voice a little bit. I'm still dealing with the aftermath, and it's been 2 weeks, over 2 weeks. Since I initially got sick, but boy, I'll tell you what, for about 4 or 5 days, I think laid me the hell out. And then on day 10, I got laid out again, which was a surprise. That was a shock to me. But
I can see that your body's been doing a bunch of fighting, and you probably felt like you had a little bit of energy, maybe did a little bit of stuff around the house, you know, just did a little bit more because you were starting to feel a little bit better. And well, maybe hit you down. That's a possibility. That happens.
No, actually, what ended up happening was I went stir crazy and I stayed the fuck in the only room that I could to keep myself isolated from my wife, because as much as I don't want to get it, I definitely don't want her to get it. And luckily enough,
so wait, what you're saying is you had a bedroom only vacation?
Yes. I know it sounds great, dude. I know it sounds great. Don't be jealous.
It does, though.
Like, don't be jealous. I went stir crazy. I ran out of things to try to do. I actually hit about a depression that lasted for a few days because I was unable to do anything.
I know. You messaged me during those times.
Yeah, it was not as pleasant as that, as appealing as something like that sounds. It wasn't to that degree, degree, right?
You're also a far more social person than what I am. I
don't consider, like, just because I happen to have a social job doesn't mean that I am that. I have graduated to a far less and less social person than I once was. And I honestly was social because I was probably lonely. But that's what happens when you live in a giant house by yourself and can't afford money for anything aside from rent. You're living your 20s. Not to say like the size of the house was great, but it was too big for me. I was able to do a bit in there, and I was able to have company on a regular basis, but it was only the regular friends I had that I was really comfortable around.
I think I know where this little bit of a disconnect happens between you and me with this.
Uh-huh.
You've had moments where you've lived on your own in a house by yourself.
Ah, yes.
I have literally never lived in a house by myself.
Oh, dude, it is. It's an experience that for certain amounts of time I thought was relatively pleasant. It was nice to be like, after you get past that honeymoon phase, though, things get real difficult. And I have dealt with that situation on multiple accounts.
All I can say is the idea of being able to sit in your living room naked, eating Cheetos, watching football, that seems really, really appealing to me. And I've never had the opportunity to do that.
You have a point. You have a point. Those days are nice. Those days are nice.
Oh, wow. My penis is orange now. Whoopsie. I mean, that's...
What were you doing while you were eating the Cheetos is the question.
It's not while you're eating the Cheetos. Wait till after. I'm not an animal. God.
Do things in order. There's a sequence that must be done.
Exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, that was one of the more interesting experiences I had, was just being stuck by myself, not able to do anything. I even, like, the only time I left the room was when I gathered things to find stuff for myself to do. And even then, I did nothing but, like, sit in the bed, play video games, and keep getting cramps and bed sores because I couldn't get comfortable.
I mean, video games is something.
Video right? games is something. This is true. This is true.
I mean, you could have been watching movies and TV series, especially since you now have Disney Plus.
You know what?
You could have been watching all the Marvel movies.
Okay, so the only reason why I didn't do that was because the only streaming capable apparatus I had inside the bedroom was a PlayStation 3, and there is no Disney Plus app on the PlayStation 3.
Yeah, you have to have at least Xbox One yeah. or a PS5 or a lot of your newer smart TVs will yeah. have it. And if you're an old fart like me and you still have a cable provider, they have all the streaming services as parts of the cable providing now. So,
which is great.
If you got your cable box, you can stream everything you could possibly, basically all the services are there as apps on the box. So really yeah. easy to work with if you want to do it that way.
But aside from the stir crazy part, and the reason why I went stir crazy was because for the first 5 days, like, I barely tested positive, like, on it. So on, I worked through the weekend and I work live sound. And then on Sunday,
wonder where you got exposed.
I actually have more of a confirm of the possibility of the place I could have gotten exposed. And it wasn't at the live venue that I was working. Funny enough.
I'm pretty sure I know where it was then.
It was kind of funny, but anyway, I started feeling like a ball of mucus in my throat on Sunday. And what sucks is that when it onsets, it feels like allergies. It just feels like allergies. It feels like any other day that I have regular ass allergies.
That's actually the part that is probably the most interesting in the world that we live in now, in the post-COVID world, is if you're somebody who doesn't really care about the situation,
yeah.
people that is not worried about it, then this isn't going to bother you. But if you're one of those people that is worried about it, if you have whatever your specific reason and motivation is for you to be worried about whether you have COVID or you're passing COVID or whatever,
yeah,
anything that you get that resembles a cold, things that, you know, years ago I would have just been like, okay, I got the sniffles, whatever, I'll see how it progresses,
right,
I'll deal with it. I can't even remember how many times I came to hang out over at your house, in that house that you were, I think the house you were talking about, the big one.
Yeah.
Is that the house I hung out at?
Yeah.
Regularly.
Yep.
We'd come out to that house, or we'd come out to to see shows with the band playing, and you know, it's loud, and of course we're right up at the foot of the stage, so it's even louder there. And there are so many times that you don't know about where I was taking you know, like freaking Dayquil and Tylenol and ibuprofen before I got there. Basically, anytime that you didn't see me drink a beer when I was at any of the venues,
right?
Anytime I didn't have a beer, and because that's my go-to at a club or you know whatever, I'll have a beer or two. I usually won't drink anything much harder than that,
right?
But anytime you did not see me have a beer, that was probably a night that I took some kind of Dayquil type medication to where it would mask as much of the symptoms as humanly possible. And then I probably took Tylenol on top of that to deal with the headache that I was going to get from being dehydrated, from being there, you know, at the foot of the stage, enjoying the music.
Right, and sweating and all,
And the headache I'd get from all the loud music. I guarantee you almost every single night I was taking that medication because you didn't worry much about it. You didn't worry about it. Yeah, you know, you may have a cold of some type, but whatever, it's not that big a deal. Now you get any of those symptoms, and you know, for again that subject, that subset of the population that is going to worry about spreading COVID around, that's your first concern is, ah, damn, do I got COVID? And then you got to worry about, great, if I have COVID, you know, who am I going to pass it to? I got a test to make sure, and then once the test to make sure. You know, then I got to let, you know, different workplaces know. If you're a parent, you got to let schools know. You have to follow all kinds of different protocols for stuff. And I mean, in our household, a week or two before you tested positive, we had, one of our children test positive.
Yeah.
And so, luckily my job allows me to work from home. So I, you know, had to let the job know, hey, I'm not coming in. And, another member of the household had to let their job know, and they couldn't go in for a couple of days.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, luckily that's all we had to deal with. We had a couple of doctor's appointments we had to reschedule, and the kid was sick for 3 days or so, and not really that bad. He made it out worse than it really was, because he's one of those that, you know, is really not much of a trooper when they get sick. And I can tell the difference with him. I can tell the difference with him when he's actually not really feeling well and when he's just wanting to bitch and complain about not feeling well.
Yeah.
And there is a difference. There is a difference. It's very, very evident in his face that whether it's really not feeling good or whether it's just what is considered the new standard, the man flu version of things, where men are known to just be whiners and criers whenever they are sick. Just for clarification, While sick, I will make a full dinner for the kids and for the rest of the family. And if I have to take breaks to go throw up while doing it, I will do it. I'm definitely not that person.
You're telling me, hold on one second. I wouldn't necessarily, like, I know there's not much choice for you, sir. I know there's not much choice. And I understand to a degree.
I'm just one of those people that fights through. That's all.
No, I understand fighting through, but you're preparing food while you're sick? Like, you're not worried that you're going to give that to your kids?
Actually, I kind of hope before COVID, I kind of hope it did, so it would build their immune system and make them strong. My kids are tanks, man.
That's
fair.
My kids are
full on tanks.
Yeah, this is the kind of, you know what, most people take that philosophy too, right? Most people take that philosophy with like the flu or whatever. It's just like
that
all
used
right,
to be the philosophy with chicken pox. If you remember when
dude,
we were kids, they
intentionally
want us
had
to,
chicken pox parties
to try to get us to play with other kids had chicken pox to get them early.
Yeah, yeah. So you just took care of the chicken pox because it took care of, like, didn't it build up your immunity to other pox-based diseases, too, on top of that?
Not really.
Was it like, it's like you get chicken pox and you're, like, immune to smallpox? Was it like that or no?
No, no.
Okay.
No.
Okay. No. I didn't know.
It just got you immunity to chicken pox, but it doesn't always work. It backfired with me. I never got chicken pox as a child. I got them when I was 18, and it was one of the more definitely one of the more horrific experiences.
Yeah, you
of
get
my
it
life.
As an adult, and that is an absolute nightmare.
Head to toe, sir. Head to toe.
Oh my God. That
and
sounds terrible.
Inside my mouth, inside my nose, around my eyes. Yeah, it was the most awful thing. I was completely covered in, and I'm not even exaggerating on this situation. It was every 2 to 3 inches on my body, there was at least one of those things, and everywhere, all over the soles of my feet.
Oh my God.
Yeah, everywhere. Places that I previously talked about being orange, everywhere, man. It was not pleasant at all.
You just like, I hate to make this comparison because of the source material, but like you were just like Lot, dude. Like how long did it last?
I'm gonna say a week.
Oh my God.
About a week.
Dude,
yeah, about a week.
Head to toe for like a week? That sucks.
Yeah.
That and then sucks.
What was nice about it is it kind of went away very quickly when it did go, like the day they started going away, like within another day or two, almost completely gone.
Wow.
But yeah, it was, I had come home from working at McDonald's and I had a bit of a fever, wasn't feeling the best. Told my parents I felt like I had a fever, felt, you know, really drained, lightheaded, didn't, you know, just not feeling good. Took my work shirt off, and my mother's like, "Oh, you're not going back to work."
Oh, like, God.
Because, I mean, I'm 18. This is the summer after I graduate from high school. And she's like, "Yeah, you're not going back to work. Look at yourself." And walking into the door of my parents' mobile home, you walk in the front door, and there's these two, there's a closet with these two giant mirrors, you know, the mirror doors on the closet.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And so
that's your standard trailer home closet door.
Yeah. 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 And, I had been looking at them and I turned to look at myself in the mirror and the trunk area, my chest and stomach already had, the spots forming. And I called my boss at McDonald's to tell them, and they were like, "Well, have you seen a doctor about it?" I'm like, "No, but I am covered in these things and I am not coming in."
The time that a cell phone picture, the time that cell phones that take pictures would have been so useful at this point, because then you could have just texted your boss and be like, "I ain't coming in. Look at this shit." Like,
you want me around? Because at that point I was working the bun toaster. I said, it's like, really, you want me toasting buns for people covered in sores? Okay, if that's what you really want. And that was like the hottest place in the McDonald's to work was in that area, because you're right next to where the grill is, but you're by these gigantic bun toasters, because there's three different bun toasters for the three different styles of buns that McDonald's would use at that time.
So, I would not want anyone. A super hot
area, and that's what I thought, was maybe I was just overheated from working in that area.
No,
nope. That being overheated in that area while I was sick with this helped to exacerbate it, I'm sure.
Oh, you could spread it. You could spread it to the other workers. Like that would have caused. That could have caused a small epidemic at that store, depending. You know. Although apparently the management didn't give a shit, and they would ask everybody to come in anyway. Apparently, so.
No, I mean, they didn't fire me when I took the time off. So.
I mean, that's good.
I quit like three weeks later.
But well, I mean, was that the case back then? What was that, 22 years ago?
24 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Goddamn old.
It was
24 years ago. It was 24 years ago. Almost around this time, in fact. Almost around this time of year, because I know 3 weeks later.
Been about 98. Holy shit. Yeah, that's crazy. I
started college in September, so I quit at the very beginning of September because they had said that they would work with my college schedule, and then they did not. And I said, "You guys promised me you'd work with my college schedule," and they said, "Well, we're not going to be able to make that work." And then I said, "Well, I'm not going to be able to work here. Bye." And they're like, "What?" I'm like,
"What do you mean, what? You said you could do that and you didn't, so that's a breach of contract. I'm out of here."
Well, I mean, there was nothing in writing because I was 18 and it was McDonald's. So they're not going to put anything in writing back then.
Shit, and they put it in writing now. They stick it all over their advertisements for the now hiring now.
But anyway, long time ago, galaxy far, far away. So yes, we took off 2 weeks because Mike did get COVID. He was quite sick.
Yeah,
Not sick enough to go to the hospital, but sick enough that life was miserable.
Yeah, it laid me out for about 4 or 5 days. And then after, so it laid me out for about 4 or 5 days, and then I was still positive for about a week. And this entire time, when I was talking about being stir crazy, because I was feeling fine, the thing is I wanted to make doubly sure that I did not give it to my wife. So as soon as I started feeling fine, like when I knew that I was like laid out flat and I was running a fever, I knew I had it. But on those days when the fever started to subside, it started to go away and I started to feel better and I was able to move around a little bit, do some stretches, and just kind of like start to keep myself from being so laid out in bed, I started testing and I was still positive. And I tested daily. And that positive test, even when I felt like right as rain, like I could have gone and done anything. I could have gone out and been whatever. Like, and this is the part that kind of scares me a little bit, that I tested positive for an entire week. It started to very slowly, gradually subside, but I'm pretty positive. Most people don't do that. And I think that's why this is still becoming such a big deal. And it really, like, when you put it into perspective, I feel like that's the kind of shit that people should be doing right now when they start to feel better, when the fever goes away. If you're testing positive, you're still contagious. You can still give it to somebody. It doesn't matter about whether or not you feel better. You might be immune to it, but now you are still outputting that virus if you test positive.
If I may say, for the couple of places of working that I know about and for the school situations that I know about.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to go back for at least 14 days after testing
positive. That's fantastic.
Unless you have a negative test.
That's fantastic. And that is, I honestly, so
that is,
I think
that is,
there are
that
a lot
is a pretty regular policy. Like
good.
When my son tested positive and I told my work said, listen, you can either stay out for this much time, or if you're not symptomatic and you haven't tested positive, you'll have to be non-symptomatic. You'll have to take a test and it'll have to be a negative test. You can come into work, but you have to wear the N95 mask while you're at work.
Yep.
And that's the only way that it's going to happen. So you have to have no symptoms, negative test, personally negative test since you've been in the house with somebody with a positive test, and then you can go back to work. And so the thing is, Mike, those policies in most of these social settings like schools, jobs, whatnot, there are policies in place. They are taking that into account. They are having a 14-day period, still 10 to 14 depending, most of them are still 14, period of waiting and or negative tests to
good.
Be able to come back.
Good.
So those things are in place. Those things are being taken care of. Now, whether people are doing that in their personal lives, insofar as staying home, not going out, not doing things, you can only control people so far. And at least many businesses, many organizations are at least trying to have that much of control over their personal liability. Because again, the as much as we want the businesses and the schools and all these things to worry about our safety, what they're really worried about is making sure that they don't have liability for letting people come back too soon. And that being the reason why other people catch things.
Good.
So, good. It's not necessarily altruistic, but I'll take it if it works, if it is being helpful, even if they're doing it just to benefit themselves, if it still benefits others, then I'll take that, at least in the society we're in.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm right there with you on it. I'm actually very glad that stuff like that is still in effect. That's actually a very comforting thing to hear. I didn't know that because you see. Everybody's digest of the news is so drastically different. And I obviously started looking up COVID symptoms at the beginning, right?
Because I'm wondering, also, like, what's going on. I know that though your wife and I work in the same industry, she is completely remote, whereas I am only mostly remote in my working. I do have a requirement of being present in the office at least one day a week. Unless extenuating circumstances make that not possible.
Right.
As long, so I have to worry about I have to worry more about that time I have to go in and what policies and procedures are. We have kids and we have to worry about that. We have other people in the household that work in different healthcare situations where healthcare work, schools, those things are going to be more stringent than many other places because of the very nature of what they do. I mean, the company that I work for, many of the doctors that work for this company are internal medicine doctors and infectious disease doctors. Right. So they have a huge amount of experience and they are regularly experiencing whatever outbreaks are happening with the various diseases. So, for instance, my office was back on masks, way before anybody else was, because our doctors that were a part of it started to see the uptick ever so slightly, and they reacted immediately to implementing measures again.
Good.
And so that's some of the things that, you know, different industries are going to have different standards and different ways of handling things, but the information is still out there to try to, and the policies are out there to try to curtail things, whether whatever you see in the media or not. What's actually happening in the real world is that they are still having these policies in place in a lot of different places, trying to curtail as best as humanly possible. And most of those in places where they have that kind of control.
Yeah.
Again, it's very difficult to have them in retail settings to have a certain level of control. We saw that throughout all of COVID. We've seen that from our experience working in retail. Controlling customers is just not, I mean, I don't know how many times I wish I had a cattle prod when I was working in customer service.
Right, of course. I will tell you, but this, like, that is something that that's something I find a lot of comfort in, because like I said, especially what I was getting at earlier, is that everybody has a completely different feed to, they're getting a completely different digestive news, every single individual. And that is nice, because after I started looking up symptoms, how long it's supposed to last, what's going on, like, what should I expect, and when should I go to the hospital? Like, I'm looking this information up because I want to make, like, quintuply sure that I am 100%, like, completely on this as much as I possibly can be, and knowing when I need to go to the hospital and all. So, because I was looking these things up, I start getting other information related to it. And I'm talking about, like, things like the CDC bringing back guidelines or pulling back some guidelines in relation to schools and stuff. But for me to hear from you that there are many places that are still putting this into effect, that are keeping their finger ahead of the pulse of the way that society is working, and how they expect to have things, you know, how they're so eager to jump over that line and be ready to just go run back into quote unquote reality or the way things were full force. To know that there is a level of control is that's soothing to me. You know what I mean? It helps. It helps to know that exists, especially going through the experience, especially knowing and taking as much time as I possibly could to digest everything that was happening to me and everything that I could do to ensure that it didn't happen to my wife. And the amount of, I feel like there's a potential that I took probably far more steps and protocols than most people would take in order to ensure that things like that don't happen. And I am very glad that there are institutions beyond what happens in your own house to help curb that. You know what I mean? There's something soothing about that. Yeah. Excuse me. I'm still dealing with the throat clearing and the cough and like the nasalishness and stuff. It doesn't go away, man. That hangs with you for a while, but that's fine. Like I said,
I mean, you basically sound like you do for most of the spring. So
right, exactly. So there's not much of a change to most people that are listening to this podcast normally.
Or if you're hanging out, you sound better than if you're hanging out at my house for a little while, and my cats decide that they want to be your best buddy.
Yep, Absolutely. Oh God. Could you imagine doing a podcast at your house? I would just be, my entire face would be melting off.
It would just be, it would be, first of all, I'd have to pry you away from our two dogs.
That is true, because I would love the living hell out of your dogs.
Our two dogs are really good dogs. And then I have to pry you away from the sister-in-law's dogs, because they're cute little dogs too. Oh. If you got a chance to see them. And then yeah, it would be a lot of me yelling at the cats to get away from us while we're trying to do the podcast, because normally the cats, one of the cats stays away from me because him and I don't agree on things because mm-hmm. he likes to get on things and pee on them, and I don't like that. And so I use a spray bottle to pee on him, and Fair. He doesn't like that. So we're at odds, him and I, on a pretty regular basis. The other cat, him and I could be best buddies. His biggest problem is, I mean, we are best buddies. He's my cat. I just don't like to have him sit on me because he has claw issues. And as much as I love him, I'm not going to put up with being clawed. So he's a pretty decent foot cat, though. I do like him as a foot cat.
Nice.
He'll lay on the ground by my feet and let me rub him with my feet. So, and he's not one of those, like, you can rub his belly, he's not going to attack you. He's just going to lay there like a dumbass and take whatever abuse you give him. He doesn't care.
That's nice.
Seriously, most friendly, gigantic, fat panther cat ever. But they would both annoy the crap out of you. Because again, they steer clear of me. Everybody else, they're up in their shit all the time. But anyway, so yes, that's why we were gone for a couple of weeks. Mike yep. was dealing with the health issues, and you know, frankly, we got to take those things as being most important. Our health is a big deal. We can do more podcasts. We can take breaks from podcasts. Health and life have to take precedence over that. So
yeah,
we're gonna take a break here, and when we come back, Mike did get a chance to finally do something.
a I think couple it was before, of things
before the time off. Or,
I
no,
did. Yeah, I did that before the time off. Break. Yes, I did that one before the time off, and then another one was today. So
yeah, you did the one. You're right. You did do the one before the time off, because I was actually really ticked at you that you got COVID and we couldn't do the podcast that day, because you had finally finished the one thing I wanted you to finish.
Yeah,
and I was raring to go to talk to you about it, to talk to you about the thing that I have not seen anybody else mention yet about this series.
Oh, really?
And I think it's absolutely brilliant.
Okay.
Absolutely brilliant.
Okay.
And then we may mention small mention of the thing that you finished today.
Yeah.
All I'll say is that it was so Sam Raimi, wasn't it?
That was very, very Sam Raimi. I swear to God, like the entire like first two acts were literally just set up for Sam Raimi to go full Sam Raimi in.
And he did.
And yeah, and he did, and it was so good. It was so good. It took so long to set up, but it was so good.
And we'll touch on that a little bit if I can get the other theory out in a concise way.
Okay. So
we'll be back in just a moment.
All right.
Hey friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the show.
And we are back, everybody.
All right.
So, I've been looking forward to this. For this entire time that we've been off, because I've been wanting to have a discussion about what I feel is, out of all of the TV series that Disney has created for these new properties that they gathered up, their various Infinity Stones of childhood loves of mine anyway,
okay.
with you know, their Marvel and their Star Wars and all their properties they're getting, Fox now, everything that they've wrangled in. They've made some amazing TV series. I mean, all the Marvel series I've absolutely loved. Actually, I was just out shopping the other day. I found a wonderful store in the Natomas area of Sacramento that is a it's It's called That's Cheap. Have you been to this place?
I've heard of it. I heard of it, but I haven't been there.
Basically, it's stuff that's no longer carried in stores or overstock stuff or whatever, that they just very much like, trying to think other stores that do similar, where they just, they get a big stock of the stuff. They bring it out, you know, still on the pallets. And basically, right. Once it's gone because they've only got the, you know, so much stock of it. Kind of like how Grocery Outlet is with certain food items.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I guess it'd be a way to describe it. And I was able to pick up for $2 each a four Funko Pop set from the Hawkeye Marvel series. So I got Hawkeye. Oh, cool. I got Yelena, who's Black Widow's sister.
Cool.
I got, what's her name? Maya, who's kind of new. She's kind of a bad guy, but is actually going to be in her own series, Echo. She is a, she's an interesting Marvel character in that she's missing a leg. She has a prosthetic leg, and she's also deaf.
Oh, okay.
So she's a bad guy in the Hawkeye series, but I think that they're kind of giving her own spinoff to, I don't know exactly what is going to happen, but she is an actual comic character, Echo, that has those same exact physical issues, and more importantly, is also somebody of Native American descent, and the actress is as well.
Okay.
So that's kind cool. of almost, she literally was the perfect fit actress for this comic book role, because it is a comic book character that is missing a leg and is deaf. And this woman is Native American, and she is Native American, missing a leg and deaf. And so,
actress is all of those things?
Yes, the actress is all of those things.
Holy shit. Okay. Yeah, that's on there.
And so, and it was the first thing she's ever done for acting. She did a pretty damn good job for her first time ever acting.
Wow. Okay.
And then one of my favorite characters from Hawkeye, one of my favorite new introduction characters, Kate Bishop, who's the kind of the main protagonist of the Hawkeye series.
Cool.
She's kind of his protege.
Yeah.
And interestingly, Hawkeye is going deaf in the series as well. It's, that's a major, the deafness is kind of a big plot point.
Oh,
with various things going on. But anyway, it's one of those moments. Hawkeye's deafness is a result of all of the shit that he's been through as an Avenger.
Oh, okay.
All the explosions he's been near and all of that. His body is physically torn up and he's going deaf, almost completely deaf at this point, because he's a normal person. He's not enhanced. He's not wearing some mechanical suit or anything. He's just a normal dude that shoots arrows at robots. And in a flying city.
Wow.
And okay. So, his body is beat all to hell as a result of all the things that he's done. And for those people who try to say that the Marvel movies don't necessarily show the aftermath of what these people have been through. Oh yes, he has the aftermath. His body's beat. He's scarred. He's bruised. He's got joints that don't work right. And again, losing his hearing as a result of everything. Great show, but I got four little pops from that. And I love that show. I love all the stuff that they put out for Marvel, all the stuff they put out for Star Wars. But at this point, the one that stands head and shoulders above them, the one I've been waiting for, was the Obi-Wan series. To see Ewan McGregor come back and play Obi-Wan. And admittedly, I grew up on 4, 5, and 6, and Sir Alec Guinness, one of the best actors ever in cinema to have taken that part, a part he hated. A part he decried for the rest of his life. Interestingly, apparently he even outside of being a Jedi, just in normal life, Alec Guinness was able to use the Force and see the future, because he did predict James Dean's death at the hands of the vehicle that James Dean died in.
Wait, what?
Interesting piece of trivia.
Oh,
yes. He told Alec Guinness actually saw James Dean in the car that he ended up crashing and dying in.
Holy
and
shit.
Told him that he needed to get rid of that car because it was going to kill him.
Holy shit.
And it did. So that was some mad real life Jedi shit. Unlike Ewan McGregor, who pretends to use the Force to open doors in like supermarkets and shit.
Hey, who fucking doesn't, man?
Yeah, but when Ewan McGregor does it, could you imagine walking into a supermarket and or just walking out of the supermarket and you see Ewan McGregor outside using his hand to do it? I mean, I'd like to think I would maintain myself fairly decently around most celebrities, but that one I might fall on the ground and be laughing. Because that's just hilarious. That's just a moment. And yes, everybody does it. Ewan McGregor's got to be careful doing that shit. It's just like he can't go around saying hello there to everybody. He's got to be careful with that shit. That's a superpower. But I was waiting to see this, waiting to see, you know, what part of the story that they would tell. And moreover, I was hoping to see what I felt was the thing that we were a little bit robbed with episode 3. And that is, what I always wanted episode 3 to be was Vader chasing down the entire movie, Vader chasing down the Jedi and eliminating the Jedi.
Right.
Not the last, you know, third of the movie where he raises the Jedi Temple. And even that, even his raising of the Jedi Temple, you get the scene with the where he's walking in with the 501st.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty neat. Scene, pretty neat setup, good shot.
Yeah.
You get the scene with in the room with the younglings, where like at that moment, I don't know if you know from episode 3, but in that moment when he's in the room with the younglings and he ignites his lightsaber,
yeah.
As Anakin, his lightsaber has a specific sound when it ignites, but at that exact moment, they use the ignition sound from Darth Vader's lightsaber from 4, 5, and 6.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's a very slightly different sound. It's one of those things that only like hardcore nerds are gonna know.
I was gonna say it's just that sound. Tiny little Easter egg, but it has all of the heft that it should at that point.
Interesting. You know, there are people that. Sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say that's interesting. I didn't know that at all.
Well, and there are people that like that's like their least favorite scene in the entire thing, and that's good because it should be your least favorite scene in the entire thing.
Well, right, it's brutal. It's like it's supposed to be uncomfortable.
Well, and it leads you into it alludes to the brutality of what he's going to do without actually being brutal.
Right.
Which leads me into how this Obi-Wan series starts. And so at this point, people, there are going to be some spoilers. The series has been out. Hopefully people have seen it. Anybody listening to this
will
have seen
it.
We're going into spoiler territory. Sorry, you got a deal. we know, of course, that Obi-Wan and Darth Vader are going to live because they have to meet again in episode 4 and Obi-Wan get killed at that point.
Right.
Sorry for a spoiler from a movie from 1977. I'm going to get into some spoiler territory with some of this because there's things I want to talk about that are awesome. And then I want to talk about something that they did with this entire series. Then again, I don't think anybody else has mentioned this. I've watched a lot of analysis of this series,
mm-hmm.
and I haven't heard anybody mention this one yet. And I don't know how many people have noticed this. So, as I'm sure you were when you sat down to watch this series, it opens up on the skyline of Coruscant, the capital city.
Right.
The capital planet city, the whole planet's a city, basically. And I noticed it immediately. I even told my wife, that's Coruscant. What the hell is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
And as the camera kind of moves down, you're seeing Coruscant, and suddenly you see a group of younglings that are practicing. And I don't know, how long did it take you? When did the moment hit you that you knew what you were watching?
Oh, as soon as I saw the younglings, I was just like, holy shit, this is opening with the massacre.
Yeah.
It was immediate. I was like, oh, no fucking way. They're starting here?
They're starting
okay, we're down
66.
For the ride. Let's go. Because I knew the series was going to be darker than what those films put out. And completely understandably so. They're adding that extra heft that I feel should have been in those movies in the 90s. That was the thing that was missing from those three films was the fact that it's almost like Lucas was too busy trying to appeal to the younger audience, to kids and people's kids, versus the fact that it was 20-year-olds that went and saw the first batch of films in 1977. So these people are pushing like 40, 50 at this time.
No. I think the thing is, if you go back and watch 4, 5, and 6, you'll see that while they keep things light enough that kids can watch them, they're not too kiddy, too cartoony. And I think the one of the mistakes made with episodes 1, 2, and 3 was they went a little too cartoony.
Right.
And even 7, 8, and 9, up until the last scene of 9, they didn't go too cartoony. And that's where I think if they had dialed back some of that cartoony and put a little more gravitas in 1, 2, and 3,
yeah,
we'd have a completely different opinion of them. But yeah, you open with Order 66, and Order 66 has been used as a touch-off point for a lot of things lately. There is a flashback to Order 66 from Grogu's point of view, mm-hmm, in the Mandalorian series. Grogu, oh, the little Yoda creature.
Yeah.
He has a at one point when he encounters Luke in the Mandalorian series. Sorry, series been out. You should know Luke appears. Luke, when he's communicating mentally with Luke and Ahsoka Tano, when they're communicating mentally with Grogu, they do get flashes of Order 66 and some of the people that might have protected Grogu, because Grogu was at the Jedi Temple when Order 66 happened,
right?
And somebody got him out, but we still don't know exactly who for sure.
Oh,
the last season of the Clone Wars, which got made way after the series ended. They went back and were able to make the last season of it. You actually see the moment where Anakin and Obi-Wan leave to go to Coruscant to the opening of episode 3 and leave Ahsoka Tano to capture Darth Maul, who, yes, at that point was still alive, to capture Darth Maul on Mandalore during his occupation of Mandalore. Because for a while, Darth Maul kind of took over Mandalore,
uh-huh,
where the Mandalorians come from.
Uh-huh.
And she captures Darth Maul, has him on a Jedi Star Cruiser heading back towards Coruscant when Order 66 happens. And she ends up, her Captain Rex, who she's able to get the inhibitor chip, the chip inside the clones' brains that make them do Order 66.
Uh-huh.
She gets the inhibitor chip out of him, and her and Captain Rex basically have to fight off half of the 501st, which Anakin sent with her. The other half is what he assaulted the Jedi Temple with. But
okay,
he sent half with her. So her and Captain Rex, who's a major, major clone figure of the, he's a clone soldier,
yeah,
for the entire Clone Wars TV series, they have to fight off an entire Jedi frigate full of clones.
Wow.
That are trying to kill her and kill him as a result of her, of him protecting her. And Darth Maul helps them at some point. Because they break Darth Maul out so that they can help him. They end up basically crashing the ship, the Jedi Star Cruiser. They crash it on a planet. And there's a sequence of them having to fight their way out of the ship as it is crashing through the atmosphere. And escape from the ship. And damn, Ahsoka and Captain Rex survive. They both appear in the Rebels TV series later. And in the Rebels TV series, you have a former Padawan, Caleb Dune, who goes by the name Kanan Jarrus at that point. And he survived Order 66 because his master's Jedi master basically protected him and told him to run. You actually get to see that scene for the new TV's, the new animated series. Bad Batch.
Oh,
which,
okay,
which is about a group of clones that were considered defective clones because the Kaminoans were trying to breed certain traits into the clone instead of making them just straight clones. They were trying to, uh-huh, bring certain things out. The idea, of course, being that they were trying to find a way to create force sensitivity in clones that Palpatine would use later to clone his body again. So it all does fit. There is backstory behind all of this.
Good Lord.
And okay, it will be introduced. But anyway, yes, the Obi-Wan series opens on Order 66, and it is as brutal as you would expect it to be. And it goes back to it multiple times throughout the series, which I think is amazing.
Right.
They add that extra level, and they give you more context to what was a very, very short thing that happened in Episode 3. They flesh it out more and add more to it. But that's one piece, and it's a good piece. You then go see Obi-Wan, who's, you know, hanging out on Tatooine. That's the first episode, right? He's hanging out on Tatooine. Yeah. Hanging out in the sand on Tatooine. You got Owen, which I love the fact that they were able to bring back the actor for Owen and the actress for Beru. from episode 2 and 3
that,
to
you
play
know
him again.
To give that, like, I want to give major props to them for getting everyone that they can. I don't think there wasn't an actor that I didn't recognize from a previous portion that didn't hadn't taken it over.
Except for the third sister, because she wasn't in it, but.
The third sister?
Fifth sister? Whatever number sister she was, wasn't she the third sister? The Inquisitor. The main bad guy.
Oh, right. Wait, so hold on, because she didn't have another part in one of the previous movies, did she?
No, she didn't exist, so.
Okay, right. No, yeah, but what I'm saying, like, everybody who had a part in the movies in the 90s, bringing them back in, like, as far as I could tell, as far as I could recognize, everyone that I could recognize from the 90s movies being in the series added that much more ability to insert yourself within the story because of everyone you recognized.
Yeah, because you can't have Bail Organa come back if it's not Jimmy Smits playing Bail
Organa. Nah, dude, that's just won't work. Yeah, exactly. That won't work.
You need to use some Jimmy Smits. and that's good. You do get to see Alderaan finally, which is awesome.
Awesome.
I mean, I like being able to finally see Alderaan instead of it being, you know, you got a small shot of Alderaan in episode 3 where Leia is brought to Alderaan and given to Bail Organa's wife, and, you know, hey, look, we got a kid now, yay.
Yeah.
You know, you get a little bit of that, but so the other bit, one of the other big spoilers that has already been released everywhere is the fact that the other major protagonist in this series is Leia as a little girl.
Yes.
And she's freaking amazing. Hilarious little girl.
I thought she was great. I thought she was, they did an incredible job casting the right person for that role. Like, that little girl was, she was awesome. Charisma for days, man.
And believable as hell as a young Carrie Fisher, as a little kid Carrie Fisher. Totally believable.
Absolutely. I thought she was fantastic. And fucking, okay, I absolutely loved seeing Flea, by the way. That was a great part for him.
Yeah, that was one of those situations like how Daniel Craig was a stormtrooper in episode 7.
Yeah.
And Kevin Smith was a voice in episode 7. Simon Pegg was a character in episode 7.
Wasn't Bill Hader BB-8 too?
Huh?
Bill Hader helped create the voice of BB-8, right?
Bill Hader was BB-8. I can't think of the actress's name, but she was in the Harry Potter movie. She was Moaning Myrtle. Shirley Henderson, that's her name. Hmm. She was Babu Frick in episode 9. Apparently Prince Harry and Prince what's the other prince? The
William?
Other British prince. William?
William, yeah, and Harry,
they were both stormtroopers in episode
9. Ah, that's great. That's great.
So you have those, you have some cameo instances like that. Greg Grunberg being put into the 3 newer movies because he's best friends with J.J. Abrams. He's in all of J.J. Abrams' stuff.
Yeah, but Flea's role was multi-episode, so it was at least over, what, 2 episodes? And he had, like, FaceTime. Like, you saw him.
It was a fun role for him to have, but also an expected role when you think about kind of the stuff that Flea does. And sadly,
oh, for sure,
gets his.
Yeah. Flea got to be Flea in Star Wars. Like, that's what that's the role he played.
And then got to be dead, so sorry for Flea. But hey, why not? But again, you start episode 1, you see Obi-Wan on Tatooine, right?
Yeah.
Obi-Wan, Tatooine, in the sand. You get episode 2.
We've just barely gotten into this. I love it. We've been talking about it for 20 minutes.
I'm getting to this. I'm punctuating points along the way. You get episode 2.
Okay.
And episode 2, he's trying to find Leia because she's been kidnapped. He goes to this area where there's like kind of a seedy city area, lots of lights, neon, that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
So Neon City, right? We can use that as kind of an example. That's a good word to describe kind of where
Neon City, very seedy. It looks very to me, the first thing I thought of was it looked very Blade Runner. Very Blade Runner, very Akira, like Neo Tokyo type shit.
Okay. I can see that. And that makes perfect sense. So, and that episode, you get a couple of moments where, like, I personally was very emotional. Obi-Wan's been distanced from the Force so that he can't be found through the Force. He's not accessed it. He's not used
it. Right.
Feels like he failed. More importantly, as far as he knows and as far as he is concerned, he left his brother, somebody that he loved, to die next to a giant river of lava. The dude caught on fire and he was dead, and you walked away from him.
And then
his other good friend, who he had done tons of adventures with, died giving birth to the kids of the two friends. So he's been watching over this. He's been watching over his best friend's kid, almost like, it's like his nephew or grandkid or something. You know what I mean? He's just, and he's cut himself off from any of this, and he has to save his best friend's other kid from dying. He's got to tap into the Force again. And when he has that moment where he touches the Force again, it's like, oh dang, this is awesome. I'm seeing him use the Force again. And that you think that's the killer thing in there. But then you get a moment late, a few minutes later, where he's watching this young little Leia try to order things around and take control of the situation. And all he can think of is Padme, who, if you've watched the Clone Wars series like I have, if you just watch the movies, you don't know the depth of the relationship. If you've watched the Clone Wars series, the 3 years of war that happened of the Clone Wars, you get to see how close Anakin and Obi-Wan were, and get to see how close even Obi-Wan and Padme were, not in a romantic way, but like in a friendship way, where they relied on each other and trusted each other, and they were part of a little family. And all he can see is his friend again in this little girl. She's exactly like her mother, having never known her mother. And it reminds him completely. You get that moment of like, oh man, what have you lost, Obi-Wan? And here's kind of the interesting parallel of all of this. You have Anakin who lost all of these things by his own actions of, fucking things up and being a dick. But Obi-Wan lost all the same things that Anakin lost. And did Obi-Wan turn evil? No. Admittedly, he went into hiding like a little whiny bitch. But he didn't turn to evil. So you think that's going to be the emotional moment, right? You think that's going to be like, wow, okay.
Right.
But no. You get the emotional moment of the Inquisitor, the third sister, reveals that one. Now, this is an interesting reveal on multiple levels. She reveals that Anakin Skywalker is still alive as Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
Obi-Wan doesn't know this, and Obi-Wan gets the moment. You see the moment where Obi-Wan's like, what? He's still alive?
Yeah.
How is he still alive? And he thought he was dead. He thought he was dead the entire time. And now it's like suddenly, oh crap, he didn't die. He's still alive. But me, being the nerd that I am, I have that moment of clarity that Obi-Wan doesn't get for a couple more episodes. I have that moment of clarity of, how the hell does she know that he's Anakin Skywalker? Because he let nobody know that. Nobody knew who Darth Vader was. If he found out somebody knew who he was, he would kill them. He killed Jocasta Nu, who was the librarian for the Jedi Temple, and an entire ship of his own clone troopers. When Jocasta Nu outed him as Anakin Skywalker, he killed her, killed the whole ship, so that nobody would know. This is like, Vader does not want anybody to know that he was Anakin at any point in time.
Is this, Clone Wars or Rebels that you're talking about?
What?
Is this Clone Wars or Rebels that you're talking about? That sounds like actually, a series thing.
This is in the comic books.
Hold on. We're talking, is this like Legends comic books or Disney era comic books?
Modern comics.
A set of comic books that are canonical?
Oh yeah, there's a bunch of stuff. There's stuff about Ben Solo's life, and Ben Solo when he's still Luke's apprentice. There's a whole series on that. There's a whole series about Vader right now. In one of the Vader series, or actually in the Vader series, Vader teams up with one of Padme's old handmaidens to go exact some revenge on some shit about other. I forget exactly what happens because I haven't read them all. But like, he teams up with one of her old handmaidens to like go and fuck some shit up.
Oh wow.
Seriously. Yeah, there's a whole comic life still that's canon, not just the old like Dark Horse stuff, all the old. No, this is current canon, current stuff that's fleshing out the Star Wars lore even more. And in that, he does encounter Jocasta Nu. He kills her for outing him as Anakin, and kills all the troopers that are with him that heard that he was Anakin. So wow. for this Inquisitor to know, it confirmed my suspicion, which again, spoiler, she's one of the younglings in the very first scene.
Right.
And she doesn't die in Order 66. She escapes. I had a feeling that was her. When I saw her and then I saw her as the Inquisitor, I'm like, that's the youngling. I had a feeling that's what it was, and that's why she knew. But the geek in me is like, she should not know that that's Anakin. So she definitely has to be. My suspicions are confirmed. She has to be the youngling, because nobody else is going to know that he's Anakin. No way in hell. He's not letting
she get...
Even the Inquisitors aren't going to know that shit.
My question is, how does she get so far in to working with the Empire and getting to be able to have, like, be face-to-face with him, and he doesn't discover or know or... anything?
He did. Nobody did know, though. He knew the whole time. He reveals that.
Oh, that's right. He does. And basically, yeah. He was manipulating her the entire time. He was using
He was using yeah. her anger and her hatred to suit his ends until it no longer suited his ends, because he had absolutely no fear about being able to defeat her. Another thing that happens in the comic books is he kills and names Inquisitors on a regular basis. He doesn't joke around. The only one who doesn't get killed and maimed doesn't really get killed and maimed is the Grand Inquisitor. He dies later. He dies actually in the Clone Wars TV series. He's locking it down. He knows what's going on. You're not going to fool him in those things, and he's just going to use you until you're of no more use, and then he'll just kill you, because he's got absolutely no worry whatsoever of you being able to hurt him. You're not going to hurt him. None of the Inquisitors are strong enough to come even close to hurting him, even in the state that he is in, being half machine.
Wow. Okay.
So you get to the third episode, right?
Yeah.
See, oh my God, this has been such a long thing we've been waiting for. I forget what my reference is in the third episode, and so give me a moment as I go back and research, because okay. I have these. There's moments from each episode that are important to kind of acknowledge in what I'm in this kind of thing I'm trying to build. Okay.
Sorry, he's got to bust out his notebook on this. Give him one moment.
Third episode, right?
Right.
You finally get the first of multiple encounters where Darth Vader actually comes face to face again with Obi-Wan. Him and Leia have escaped from the Neon City planet. They escape to another planet. Bunch of different shenanigans happening. Obi-Wan not being a very good liar and screwing shit up. They end up, there's a couple of good voice cameos in that too. The driver of the truck that's driving them around.
Right.
I forget who that is. It's not Seth Rogen, even though it sounds like him. It's somebody else. I can't remember who the actor is, but, actually I can look it up right here, 'cause I have my thing in front of me. But the key here is you meet an Imperial spy. Oh, it's Zach Braff. You meet an Imperial spy, somebody who's working for the Empire, but is actually working for the Rebellion, the beginning of the Rebellion. Mm-hmm. You see she gets them into a hidden room, which has a lot of all this stuff on the walls. Oh my God, there's so much deep lore on the walls, including
really?
Quinlan Vos, who is a Jedi who... pretty badass Jedi, but he was one of those that skirted near the edge of going into the dark side. He actually ends up teaming up with Asajj Ventress at one point or another to try to kill Dooku. He ends up being turned to the dark side. A lot of stuff happens with him, but there's stuff written by him in there. There's a lot of cool lore stuff, cool little tidbits written on the walls in that room. You eventually come to getting at the end of this episode, you get a confrontation between Vader and Obi-Wan. And Vader's basically just toying around with Obi-Wan the entire time. He's coming on aggressive as hell, and Obi-Wan is just doing his best to stay alive at this point, because he's not fully back in touch with the Force. He's not fully back into himself. He's still a, you know, sad, pathetic old man that, you know, doesn't know what to think of this friend of his now who, you know, he cared about is now just this kind of death-killing robot thing. And you have this amazing moment where it's messed up, an amazing moment where basically Obi-Wan gets set on fire, in a sense, drug through fire.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And burns.
Oh, yeah. So, dude, that was the presentation of the entire scene in and of itself was just brutal as hell. That's one of the things that I loved about it was just the themes of it. Like, it skirts this level of it so finely skirts that toes the line to certain levels of violence that exude a severe amount of gravitas to it. Like, you don't know how bad it's going to get in a few instances. Throughout the series, I saw this with a few examples, probably some of the ones that you're going to mention later as well. Like, there are ones that stick out to me that are like a sore thumb that are just like, holy shit. But this was one of those. This was an oh shit moment for me. The amount of the intentional, what I loved about that scene specifically was just the, you could taste the hatred and the torture that was being projected on Obi-Wan in that moment. You knew that Vader was looking to enjoy every second of watching him burn to a crisp. You knew that he wanted it.
Yeah, you let me burn, I'm gonna make you burn. And
right.
Obi-Wan's able to escape. Leia is captured. And this is important. Leia's captured and Obi-Wan escapes, right? End of the episode, basically.
Next episode,
Obi-Wan gets him back to healing. Next episode, Obi-Wan has to, with his new Imperial spy person, he ends up having to go to, and a few other people to help him out, he ends up having to go to the Inquisitor base, right? The Inquisitor's base.
Yes.
To rescue Leia, who's about to be tortured all to hell, which I'm sure is another one of those moments that's pretty intense when she's almost about to be tortured. This little kid is about to go through some like hardcore, it seems, torture.
Dude, yeah.
She ain't going to give up any information.
Right.
And so Obi-Wan's got to go in there and rescue her. You see a Jedi graveyard, which, by the way, again, one of the canon things in the animated series, in the comics, whatever, dead Jedis were actually used to lure in live Jedis for the Inquisitors and the clones to catch and kill.
Oh, wow. Okay, no joke. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In fact, and there is one dead Jedi who appears in there who actually, in the Clone Wars series, had a couple of episodes where he worked with Ahsoka Tano when she left the Jedi Order. But anyway, the key to this episode is Obi-Wan goes to base to save Leia. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. He's able to save Leia. They lose some people in the process, but he's able to save Leia. There's a lot of good pieces in there, including Vader showing up late and almost killing people, but then not. Which is always fun.
Right.
Then you get episode 5, part 5, as it were, where they are Obi-Wan is with Leia, holed up with these rebels. They have the Empire is found out by attaching a tracker to Leia's little floating robot toy.
Right.
They've attached a tracker, they're able to find out where the base is. Okay.
Okay.
Empire's descending upon the base. You have some major action sequences of the stormtroopers and the third sister trying to break into the base. You have a moment where Obi-Wan finally realizes, "Oh, you were a youngling. That's how you know you've
right.
been you've been you've been after Vader this whole time. Okay, so he being the great negotiator, you finally see him be the negotiator, which he was very much in the Clone Wars series, but you see him be the negotiator and is able to trick her into basically bringing Vader down to the planet. They go to make an escape. You have one of the best scenes ever of their ship escaping, and Vader, unlike when Ahsoka Tano tries to stop Darth Maul from leaving the crashing Jedi starfighter at the end of the Clone Wars series, and she's just barely able to hold the ship from flying away, and finally it does, Darth Maul escapes, or where it takes like a huge amount of concentration for Starkiller, Darth Vader's apprentice in the Force Unleashed games, to bring a Star Destroyer crashing down. It takes him like an insane amount of concentration to do it.
Yeah.
Vader just reaches out his hand, dude, grabs the ship,
yes,
and throws it to the ground.
That was the second oh shit moment to me. It's just I remembered looking at it and going, dude, he ain't even fucking trying. He just goes boom, boom. Like it takes seconds for him to slam that bitch right back down onto the ground. It was nothing.
Like, yeah, it's like okay, but then of course Obi-Wan knows that's going to happen, so he escapes.
Right, didn't it? Wasn't it it was a decoy ship or something like that?
Huh?
Wasn't it a decoy ship or something like that?
Yeah, the first one was a decoy, because...
Well done, by the way. Absolutely, great little twist, I thought.
And then you have Reva finally, the third sister, finally trying to take out Vader, and Vader just... literally barely works to defeat her.
Oh yeah, he kicks the shit out of her.
He reveals that he knew the entire time who she was, and that's why, like I said, he had no fear. What I didn't mention was probably the most amazing opening scene in this episode. The thing that kind of stopped everybody, which was Hayden and Ewan in episode 2 look.
Yeah,
exactly, in episode 2 look. At the Jedi Temple, having a duel that it starts with that, and then it comes back to the duel throughout the episode. Like the duel they're having then is basically the same duel they're having throughout this episode, except mentally instead of physically. And I'm just going to say, other than Hayden obviously being older, because he obviously is, still amazing to get back into. He looked like Anakin. He moved like Anakin. Everything was Anakin. And Obi-Wan, same thing. Ewan was Obi-Wan. That fight sequence was just brilliant and amazing. And it shows, it fleshes out, I think, the world of episode 2, because you know it's happening within that same time period. And it's fleshing that out. You don't know if it's happening, if it happened before episode 2 or directly. Actually, it's before, because it can't be after. Yeah. Anakin still has both of his hands. So this is before episode 2, and it's fleshing that out even further, giving mm-hmm. that episode 2 even more depth. Just like all of the flashbacks to the Order 66 is adding depth to episode 3.
Yeah.
So, but what you have for the overarching thing of this is you have the Empire finds a rebel base, and the rebels escape, right?
Yes.
Empire finds base.
Rebels escape.
Rebels escape. Yep. Okay. Okay, now you have six, right? Part 6.
Right.
And part 6, I could spend an entire podcast episode talking about the battle that happens. But, because that's, I mean, there's cutting back and forth between the third sister going after, third sister having found out about at least the existence of Luke, and going to Tatooine to try to basically take out Luke. And Owen and Beru doing a great job trying to fight her off as best as possible for just being Owen and Beru.
They were actually pretty kick ass too.
Oh, Beru was like, I'm throwing this shit down. This is my kid. I'm protecting my damn kid.
She was all over it, man.
But you have this. You have this this knockdown drag out battle between Obi-Wan and Darth Vader. This is the, just like that that 45 seconds that you got at the end of Rogue One, that people like me who was waiting to see why Darth Vader was so feared, why he was such a badass.
Yeah.
Admittedly, you got a little bit of it in the third episode here with the third part here where, you know, where Obi-Wan was burning at the end as Vader's walking down that street looking for Obi-Wan and he's just randomly choking people out, just randomly killing people that aren't helping him.
Oh, dude.
It's just walking down the street, that shows how vicious and evil he is. But this fight in the sixth part of this is the fight that as much as people may have wanted to try to talk up or talk down the battle at the end of episode three, this is so much more.
This has
more emotion, more power, more everything to it.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. I completely agree. I was actually blown out by how much intense it actually got. I loved the way that the whole fight itself was laid out. But what I love from kind of the geek standpoint is
Obi-Wan doesn't fight with his normal fighting style. He actually changes up his fighting style and fighting this battle.
I was curious about that.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I was actually curious about that. I wanted to know what your take was on this, because from everything I saw, there was just so much more...
Obi-Wan's fighting style is
so much more force-oriented, like just full bore. Like,
yeah.
It reminded me somewhat of the... It reminded me somewhat of the Yoda v. Dooku fight, where they're playing with force powers back and forth before shit really starts to hit the fan and then the lightsabers come out. But this was kind of like done in almost a reverse order, like to a degree. Actually, it was all kind of like intermingled and integrated all at once. It's like what you expect a real Jedi battle to be, you know?
Exactly. This is what I've been looking for a full-on Jedi battle. And you're talking one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, well, one of the most powerful Jedi, because technically Anakin was the most powerful.
Yeah.
And like three-quarters of Anakin going at this. And again, Obi-Wan's style, typically the style that he trained in was best known as a defense style.
Yeah.
Which is the reason why he was the perfect person to go up against General Grievous and four lightsabers, is his specific style is basically designed so he could be surrounded by people shooting at you with blasters and be able to deflect every blaster shot that comes at you. Because it's almost a purely defensive style. And the only attacks are minute counterattacks based on your blocking scheme.
Yeah, you wear down the opponent.
This is not a...
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not an aggressive style in any way.
It's fucking... It's the Muhammad Ali philosophy. Like, that's what he did.
Which is one of the reasons why... for instance, in the episode three fight, it goes on for as long as it does because Anakin's is a very aggressive style of fighting.
Yeah.
And so Anakin's aggression and attack with Obi-Wan's defense, it just basically would keep running in circles. Interestingly, there's a moment in the Clone Wars series where Anakin and Obi-Wan are fighting Dooku.
Uh-huh.
And the way that they animate this specific fight, Dooku purposely isolates the two of them as he's attacking, and he uses a style against Anakin that makes Anakin be defensive,
because he's weaker at it.
Uses a style against Obi-Wan that makes Obi-Wan have to be more aggressive.
Right.
One of the things that in the lore Count Dooku was very well known for was his ability as a very cerebral lightsaber combatant. He used his brain for fighting as much as his skill, and his specific skill style was a very elegant form of lightsaber combat. And so to be able to realize what each of their styles were, what their main styles were, and to basically have them have to do the opposite of their main styles kept them off guard,
right,
and made him have an easier time at it. So this is, you have Vader stepping into this fight expecting Obi-Wan to be on the defensive, and Obi-Wan goes straight onto the aggressive.
Right.
You have the moment where, you know, Obi-Wan is lost, buried at the bottom of a pile of rocks, which is, basically the same as Vader leaving him to die under the pile of rocks, just like Obi-Wan left him to die.
Right.
But Obi-Wan comes back out. You have the completion of the fight, and you get one half of Vader's mask destroyed. And yeah. most importantly, you get the sound cue, the breathing sound cue from when his armor is failing,
yeah.
his breathing system is failing at the end of Return of the Jedi. Same exact, they use the exact same sound.
Yes.
So you have Vader's unmasked, basically, and breathing difficulties, right?
Yep.
The breathing sound.
Yep.
Interesting to note, in the Clone Wars series, not in the Clone Wars, sorry, in the Rebels series, Ahsoka ends up in a fight with Vader, not knowing that Vader is Anakin when she's in the fight with him.
Uh-huh.
She breaks the right side of his mask off. In doing so, she sees that it's Anakin underneath.
Ah.
And she has the moment of realization that that's Anakin. Obi-Wan breaks the left side of his mask.
Ah.
This was done intentionally. And it's also the moment where Obi-Wan realizes Anakin is dead. That is not Anakin anymore. That is only Vader.
Right.
And he calls him Vader. But the key here is broken mask, right? The breathing
right.
sound.
Right.
So, kind of a quick synopsis. Everybody needs to see it, especially for that fight. I've watched that fight like 5 times.
I was going to say, I've only seen it once, but I do want to revisit taking a look at it, because that shit was just, it was bombastic as hell. It was just so large. It was so much larger than I expected it to be. Especially, like, I went into this series wondering where the hell they were going to go. Especially now when you look at the fight with Obi-Wan and Darth Vader in episode 4, it's so much tinier. But Obi-Wan, it gives you context where Obi-Wan's purpose is just to be a distraction, to get the kids out. He knew he was going to die when he got onto that ship. He knew he was done, which is why he gave up, which is why he surrendered to Vader at the end of that fight. And it gives you...
Well, and that has to do with what you see at the very, very end of this episode, which is, big spoiler, the Force ghost of Qui-Gon Jinn.
Yeah.
Who has learned to transcend through the Force beyond life.
Right.
And be able to Force project, which is what he teaches to Yoda eventually, and Obi-Wan.
Right.
So
he's the one that learns how to do that, right? He's the one that learns how, and then everyone else has the capability of doing it after Qui-Gon teaches it to them.
Which, again, is touched on in a later episode of The Clone Wars when Yoda finds out that Qui-Gon has learned how to do this.
Oh, okay.
Yes, Clone Wars is worth watching, people.
But
here's the theory. Here's the theory. Here's the theory, okay?
Okay.
So episode 1, we see a bunch of action, right? But then we have to find...
Right.
We find Obi-Wan hidden away somewhere on Tatooine, right? Uh-huh. So you got somebody that could be Force sensitive but isn't anymore hiding on Tatooine.
Okay.
Found on Tatooine. Very much like how Anakin was found on Tatooine in episode 1 of the movies, right?
Right.
Okay, you have your part 2 of the Obi-Wan series. There's that, you know, the Neon City. Very much like Coruscant when Anakin and Obi-Wan are chasing the bounty hunter who tried to kill Padme, and they find him in the bar. Jango Fett kills him, and they go on the adventure to find Jango Fett. Very similar look, right?
Yes.
They have that kind of Neon City look. Okay. They both have a similar look. Mm-hmm. Similar motif and look.
Okay.
Part 3 here, you have a Jedi burning, being Obi-Wan, being burnt. Exactly like in episode 3, Anakin being burnt.
Okay.
Then you have part 4, Obi-Wan goes to a base to rescue Leia.
Okay.
That sound familiar?
Yep. Okay. I see where you're going.
Episode 5, you have the Empire finding a rebel base and the rebels escape at the last minute.
Cute. Okay.
And episode 6, you got Vader unmasked, the breathing sound effect. And, of course, Force Ghost at the end.
Okay.
What I'm seeing is these beats and these various things were created as this 6-episode series being an homage to the parts of the original movies that Obi-Wan was in. And each one has a connection to each one of those original movies. So on top of beautiful story and all these other things, and maybe it's just me seeing it. I don't know if they did it on purpose, but I see them hitting specific beats to rhyme with in a kind of poetry, just the type of poetry that Lucas had talked about, the rhyming motifs within the movies.
Right.
I see this being paid homage in each one of these specific moments in each one of these. That yes, there's other moments on Tatooine with Luke on Tatooine, and I get that. And you see that, you know, there's multiple Tatooine moments in this series and in the movies, but there's enough to see this kind of overarching thing of they paid homage to the original series that Obi-Wan was a part of. Not saying that 7, 8, 9 aren't part of the Skywalker saga, because they are.
No, yeah.
But this show wasn't Skywalker. This show was Obi-Wan.
Right.
And these are the 6 episodes that Obi-Wan is a part of.
Right.
And it's almost like, you know, and you think about it, really, you know, Obi-Wan is watching over Luke. You know, Obi-Wan's watching a kid on Tatooine. Yes, he did that in episode 4 of the original movies, but he also did that. He met a kid on Tatooine in episode 1 of the movies. You know what I mean?
Right.
So this is, I can see that, to me, that's the thing. I haven't heard anybody mention this kind of connectivity to the original series, in that each one of those seems to pay homage to themes and looks and ideas and specific story beats from the original series. What do you think?
I kind of like that. No, I don't think you're overthinking it. I'm curious if that was intentional. I bet you, look, man, if you're the one if you're seeing something like that, you can't be the only one who's seeing stuff like that. I think that there may have been something. I'm pretty sure that was caught when they were putting the screenplay together. You know what I mean? For the entire series. I think that was caught then.
Well, it makes sense in the sense that some of the things that are the best things, there are many people that have decried it, but I think some of the best things that happen in episode 7, 8, and 9 is the connections to the previous episodes. People right. hated 8 because they hated The Last Jedi because why is Luke so hiding out, so cranky and so mean and so whatever? And like, okay, admittedly, Yoda was funny and shit when you first saw him in episode 5.
Right.
But still, he's a bitch that got beaten in a fight and ran away and went and hid on a you know, swamp planet.
Okay? I looked at from the philosophy that I was taking it, obviously, like with the introduction of this series, it does change a lot about the context. But a lot of what was going on with Luke, I saw, was very much an analog to Obi-Wan at the same time. When 7 and 8 first originally came out, everybody was pissed off that Luke was like, that Luke ran away and was in hiding after
what Obi-Wan
what
did.
He did failed. Yeah. Did. I'm like, that's what fucking do. Obi-Wan did. Yeah, that's exactly what I was like. That's what I said. It was like, Obi-Wan was part of the same thing. What was he doing? Hanging out, hiding on a fucking desert planet. Like, he wasn't doing anything. He hadn't done anything for decades, well, essentially, not, at that point, I mean, from okay, what we had
hold
known.
On. Hold on. Obi-Wan was at least keeping an eye on Luke and making sure nothing happened to Luke. Yoda was just on some swamp world, okay?
That's true. He just true. Went to some, Even to Yoda some was swamp like, world. Yeah, then that's another example. It's just kind of like, okay, you go and you hang the fuck out somewhere and stay the fuck out of sight. Like, that's what you do as a Jedi. When things go shit, you get the hell out of Dodge and you stay hidden for a while until you're needed, which is exactly what happened with Luke. And by the way, when Luke finally gets called and does what he is supposed to do, he fulfills his purpose and then he dies. Who the fuck else did that? Obi-Wan? Yoda? Yeah. Everyone yeah. else. Every other Jedi. He literally was just the Jedi of the whole film. The reason why they call him the Last Jedi is because he was, and he did the same thing the other Jedi did.
And what he was, what one of the things he was trying to prove is that the Jedi Order was wrong with the way that they did things. The Jedi Order was too strict, was wrong, and in their arrogance caused all the things to happen. So, I mean, anyway, point being,
yeah,
point being, watching the Obi-Wan thing, obviously, to me anyway, it does make episode 2 and 3 better. It fleshes those out more. It gives more to them. It makes the performances, even as problematic as some of those performances are, I feel like I'm connected more. But I've also felt that way since I've watched the Clone Wars TV series. For anybody that still is a Star Wars fan and still has issues with episodes 2 and 3, please, please, please watch the Clone Wars TV series. I know it's going to take you weeks to watch it because there's like 6-7 seasons of it. I understand that, but seriously, it will make it so that you can like episodes 2 and 3 better. I mean, you're not going to like them better than the Clone Wars series, because the Clone Wars series is freaking awesome, but you will like them better than maybe you already do right now.
Yeah.
But so far as Obi-Wan goes, still the best thing that I've seen Disney put out yet for the Marvel and the Star Wars properties. And that's saying something, because I love all the other stuff that they've put out. There's nothing yet that I haven't liked. Boba Fett was kind of the least liked of all of them. But even still, amazing series. And I firmly believe, you know, you're right. I'm sure that somebody else has seen this, just nobody else has talked about this. And if that was part of the purpose, was to pay a little homage to each one of the episodes of the that Obi-Wan was in the original movies.
Yeah.
By having those little story beats, that just again adds to this kind of this poetic motif that was part of what George Lucas was trying to do. Is these are modern day fairy tales. These are modern day fables. Mm-hmm. They're not supposed to be necessarily realistic and too nasty and dirty and gritty. They're supposed to have that fantastical quality to them.
Yeah.
And they can get gritty to an extent, but still maintain that kind of poetry involved.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
That's what I think this series was able to do.
Okay, so I feel, first off, I agree with pretty much everything you've said on that. And I'm going to consider you much more an expert on the matter than me. But as that is in play, I want to ask you a question. I feel like this is a good place to, and I'm not trying to like hijack the episode or anything like that, but I feel like this is a good place to close out, if you don't mind. But I want to close out with something specific, and I want to get, this is all you, okay?
Okay.
So considering this series, considering everything about it, what is your new Star Wars viewing order based on this series, and where would you insert it?
This would go where it's appropriate for it to go.
okay.
And this would be you laugh as I'm saying that. This would be the only Star Wars series that I believe at this point is required viewing for to go along with the movies.
Right.
And I add Rogue One into the Skywalker saga only because it is such a good movie. It really,
well,
really
adds,
is.
It adds so much context.
That does
to episode
get dark.
4. Yeah.
I mean, basically every protagonist in that movie dies.
Yeah.
So
spoiler warning.
It's got some darkness in there, but it's also about how even out of that hope can come out. So that's kind of the whole theme of Star Wars anyway.
Right.
But it's just such a great movie. So the proper viewing order at this point would be, I would say, watch episode 4.
Okay.
Start off with the original.
Okay.
Hit Rogue One again.
Yep.
Because you've just found out the plans in the Death Star, so now you get to go back and watch how they got the plans.
Okay, 4 and then Rogue One.
4, Rogue One. Mm-hmm. Then episode 5. And then after episode 5, you have that moment on the bridge with Vader being introspective because Luke just flew away.
Yeah.
And you didn't realize his daughter just flew away as well.
Yeah.
You watch episodes 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
Watch Obi-Wan.
Okay, directly Obi-Wan all the way through. 3. 5, 1, 2, 3, all 6 episodes of Obi-Wan, right?
All 6 episodes of Obi-Wan.
Okay.
Then watch episode 6.
Okay, 4, Rogue One, 5, 1, 2, 3, Obi-Wan, 6, and then 7.
Man, take a, then he could take a break for a while and come back to 7, 8, 9 later. That's okay.
So no, it's okay. Seven, take eight, a little bit of a order. Break. Yeah, that makes sense.
A little bit of distance, a little bit of distance actually will help a little bit. Yeah. Let all that other stuff sink into you, and when you come back to
digest the information, digest the information.
That, and when you come back to 7, 8, 9, you get, you know, you get some distance, and when you see Han Solo and Chewbacca again, you can have a little thrill of excitement. When you see Leia and Luke again, you can have a thrill of excitement.
Yeah.
And you know, that gives you a little bit of that, but you definitely, I do believe that at this point, after episode 3, Obi-Wan should be your viewing. It is essential, I think, to watch as part of the full narrative. It gives you more, and, you don't want to miss the sixth, part of that and everything that happens in there. I mean, it's...
Well, I like how when you look at 4 and then you look at Rogue One, you start to get a good example of the amount of, especially when you look at Darth Vader's tragic story, right? And how he becomes one of the most feared beings in the fucking universe, is you start to get a good example of how powerful he actually is in Rogue One. Like, you get a legit example.
Yeah.
But then by the time, if you go through all of, you know, you go through 1, 2, and 3, and then you go through Obi-Wan. Sorry, what were you saying?
That's actually why I think it's appropriate to watch Rogue One before you watch Episode 5.
Because
there's the moment in Episode 5 where he chokes out the Admiral from he's sitting on his ship. He's sitting on the Executor. He chokes out the Admiral either on somewhere else on his ship or on another ship, and then promotes Captain Piet to Admiral Piet.
Yeah.
He pulls that, and what you see of him in episode 4 is not quite enough for you to believe that he's that powerful.
Right.
But if you watch Rogue One and see that last scene of Rogue One, and then near the beginning of episode 5, within the first third of episode 5, you see him pull that choke from one starship to the other.
Right.
You're like, yeah, okay, that fucker that just decimated a hallway full of people, he could totally do that.
Right.
He could totally pull that off.
But then you see all the other shit that happens in Obi-Wan too, and that's where I think is, so by the time you hit 6 and you've got you have Lucas captured, you have the fight between the two of them, you have all of the gravitas of the entirety of Vader's backstory now in the middle of that fight. When Vader, you can tell now, Vader is not only as powerful as he is, the dude's taking down ships with, like, you know, a snap of his fingers practically. He's fucking choking people out in the streets with reckless abandon. He's dragging people through fire. He's just going batshit at that point. So he's the evilest motherfucker in the universe, you could tell at that point. And then what do you see at the end? You see the humanness that comes out in him with the conflict between his son about to be killed by the one person he's followed his entire life and the amount of power he has the capability of going of harnessing at any point in time, and the fact that he violates that loyalty to save his kid. That has so much more weight to it now that you have the entirety of Obi-Wan and Rogue One and everything else you've seen from his character at that point. That makes that redemption so much bigger than it has been just watching the movies.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where I think about it. So
I
agree entirely with your whole viewing with the viewing assessment. Like, that's exactly what I would do. That's exactly how I would watch it.
And yes, it does mean that's what I'm going to make my wife sit through at some point or another.
Making a whole weekend, nice, man. You're getting a weekend out of it.
I'm getting like a whole week out of it because she can only take so much at a time. She'll be excited to watch the Obi-Wan series again. She really, really liked that.
Oh, it was killer.
She likes 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. She is not really a fan of 1, 2, and 3, but that's okay.
That makes sense.
I got a kid that'll watch it with me. But anyway. Hopefully, you enjoyed my theory. And if you have not seen Obi-Wan yet, I'm sorry for spoiling it. Go watch it now. There's still more that I didn't get all the way into. But maybe you can be on the lookout for some of these things. So Mike,
yeah,
where can people listen to us talk about more Star Wars stuff?
Oh man, did I forget? Well, you can be checking us out at our website, thezenialchronicles.com or zencron.com. You don't want to type that much. You could also check us out at most major podcast platforms. Just search for The Zenial Chronicles. You could find us there. Also, check us out on YouTube as well. We are there. Our podcasts come out in video format as well. Search for The Zenial Chronicles in YouTube search. You'll find us there. You'll probably be listening to this most likely in video format if you already are. Please make sure underneath this video or wherever it is, you go down and you hit the like button on the video, and you also hit the subscribe button next to the like button over there, so that next time we have a podcast, it comes up on YouTube, you get notified. And there's also one more thing to do, James. What is that?
Click the bell.
That's right.
That's right.
I'm sorry.
Click the bell.
It's cutting off. You said, I'm sorry. It's cutting off, and you just said lick the bell, and it's in the recording. And I'm leaving it.
Hey, man, if you want to lick that bell, that's okay. I would sanitize it first, but whatever. Your own choice.
Hey, and, some people like to live dangerously.
My choice of sanitizer, just so we're clear, my choice of sanitizer, if I'm going to lick something afterwards, whiskey, but not Jack Daniels, because that stuff is crap.
I mean, to each his own, I guess, because I love the hell out of that.
And you're wrong.
And I'm wrong, of course. All right, and I think that, yes, make sure you click the bell or lick the bell if you wish. In order to get notified the next time we have a video out on YouTube. And James, I think that's it for me. What about yourself, sir?
While you're there, while you're checking us out and licking the bell and whatever else you're doing, please make sure to check out Mike's two other pages on YouTube. Hey, we've been off for a few
weeks. It's been a while.
we're a little rusty, and I don't like the taste of WD-40. Mike's two other pages on YouTube. He has a page that he does with his wife playing video games called Chronosode Games. This is them playing video games in chronological order of the story, not in order of when the games were released.
Right, exactly.
But basically, it's just Mike playing video games badly.
Yep. Yep.
And doing really bad voiceover as well.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm terrible. I'm just terrible overall, but at least it's entertaining, at least I hope.
And that's the important part, is we need something to entertain us. Yeah. Mike's other page that he's not as terrible with is his Ruling Note music page, where he does different videos about music history, musical information, gear information, because Mike does music stuff other than doing all of this and learning more about Star Wars and being browbeaten into watching stuff that he's not sure he wants to watch, but then enjoys it afterwards. Because come on, man, I'm the guy that recommends movies. That's what I do. anyway, check that out too. Like both of those, subscribe, click the bells on those so that you get notified, so that you have more content in your life. Anyway, thank you all for listening, and we'll be back again. Oh, wait. I want to wet some whistles here.
What?
Next week.
Yes.
We're going to be talking about the thing that you watched today that we didn't get a chance to touch on. Enough.
Yeah.
Today, Mike watched a Marvel movie.
I actually watched a Marvel movie. This is correct. I have not seen a Marvel movie in years, and I finally watched one.
And it's actually my wife's favorite Marvel movie. She was excited to go to the theater to watch this. Because it's the first Marvel movie that I can say is not your standard just action flick. It is a almost horror homage.
I would say not really a horror movie, but
definitely a horror homage.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it.
Anyway, we will talk about that movie.
Yeah, enough of
when we come back.
Enough of the teasing, man.
Got to tease. We'll talk about that when we come back next week.
Click the bell.
Go enjoy yourselves.
Goodbye.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.